Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here in a small crowded studio with the entire Boundless team, Mott, Steve, Ted,
we call
and
Candace. Cozy.
Welcome, well, everyone. That's good because it's, you know, getting a little colder outside.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. Okay, this podcast is releasing on 10/31, which is also known as Reformation Day, which is also known as Halloween. And I'm going to do a focus first. Happy Halloween, everyone. No.
Oh. I'm just
Lisa. Rebuke.
Lisa likes candy corn.
I do like candy corn. I also, I'm going to admit it, when I grew up, I loved Halloween. My parents let me trick or treat. I have no idea why. But you
I
know,
like
my
those
grandma.
Peeps. The peeps are what I go for.
What, that is Halloween peeps? Easter. That's not Halloween.
That's totally the wrong holiday. If
but
they're
my
orange,
grandma.
They're
okay, so I was in this legalistic home growing up, but my grandma, Halloween was her favorite holiday. What is that about? And she
That's
always
weird.
Dressed
that
up in elaborate
weird.
Costumes.
She probably had a chocolate addiction. Halloween is for chocolate lovers.
Okay, how many people around the table were in the dark houses on Halloween?
Me.
Dark houses.
Yeah, I was in a dark
All
house.
All the lights were off. If the doorbell rang, you cowered in the basement.
We handed out candy, but we also handed out tracts, so that legitimized it.
Oh, there you go.
We do like candy with Halloween tracts, you know, done by, not the chick tracts, not the scary ones, but the just ones that were current, whatever.
The Halloween scary tracts. Ones would have been more appropriate.
That's right. Uh-huh. It kind of yeah. depended on the year if my parents were feeling legalistic or more loosey-goosey, more free. Some years we trick-or-treated, some years we cowered in the darkness.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, Ted is our resident Halloween expert.
Mm-hmm.
Due to, what is this, your previous life in a satanic
oh,
lifestyle
goodness.
Or
years
what?
Years ago, I did some research. I was kind of hung up on Halloween against, I've loosened up a lot. I'm not, it's like a whatever kind of holiday. But back in the day, if I recall correctly, the research was that it was a holiday of begun by some ancient Celts. The British Islands, they would have bone fires. Some people challenge that, and they say it's a bonfire, bon good French, you know. But fires of bones, they'd hollow out gourds in which spirits of maybe evil spirits or something would reside, and so on. So there's a connection apparently to a lot of the artifacts that we've got in the current
and they would sacrifice the Kit Kat and therefore the
I'm not tracking you at all, Steve. Yeah, help me out here.
The tradition of the Kit Kat that
Anywho.
Gives
oh my whatever its origins, it's definitely become scary as people have just kind of upped the gore factor and the smut factor.
What I think is scary is the catalogs full of costumes for kids. You know, they're demonic and they're sexualized and I think they're terrible.
Yeah, we throw those away before the kids get the mail.
Yeah.
That they actually have catalogs that you order out of costumes? Where do those come from?
Well, are there flyers like from
Hell?
Stores? No,
oh,
from Party City or whatever. And they show
gotcha,
all,
okay.
you know, the discounted.
Yeah, it's Party City, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it weren't for the candy, if it weren't for the prospects of pillowcases full of sugar, would people really keep doing...
Pumpkins are fun.
Well, yeah, pumpkins are fun.
Well, I think they might do the harvest stuff, but no, you're right. It's the candy that keeps everybody coming back.
I think it's just kind of the whole, I mean, I've been to Halloween parties where, I went to one, in fact, with some people at church that they made like this whole haunted house. And I'm not even joking. It was awesome. Like you had to crawl under their house and they'd made this whole maze and then people were scaring you and stuff
like
that.
Did they have bags of weird stuff you had to put your hands in?
Like spaghetti.
Yeah, like stuff
spaghetti.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, there
See,
were all different elements.
And
olives.
I don't like
olives.
To be scared. That's why I don't like Halloween.
AKA
well,
eyeballs.
Can't you just do it for like the Snoopy for the Great Pumpkin stuff? Because that's cool too.
It's not real, Lisa.
That is a great flick.
It's
that.
So lame. Half of it is the World War I flying ace because they ran out of ideas.
I know, but if
that was
wouldn't
awesome.
You just want to be sitting in the pumpkin patch? Like, I just always feel like I'm there with Charlie Brown.
You mean Linus.
Linus.
Oh, Linus, sorry.
I remember the last time I went trick-or-treating. I was out, like, in some sort of stupid costume I found in the closet, like a hat. And the person, the first
this
door I went
last
to.
Year.
No, well, this was a while back. But the first door I went to, the guy looked at me and said, "Aren't you a little old to be trick-or-treating?" Mm-hmm. And that was it.
He never went again.
Never went again.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have kids, right?
I didn't
right?
go at first. My first time going trick-or-treating was as a college student. because we never went as kids. And I remember
college students?
We didn't even get costumes. We just said, anytime people said, well, what are you dressed as? We said, a college student. And thinking we were all clever and cute. No, but that
was
fun.
We turned the lights off. Now, though, everybody needs to know that Steve and I turn the lights off after the little kids are done. When the little kids go home and go to bed and the college students start showing up, we're not home.
But the point is, Christians can disagree on whether or not they celebrate Halloween by sending their kids out or whether they go to parties.
Just kidding, Matt.
Well, or they celebrate Reformation Day. Right?
We celebrate Reformation Day. I mean, our church has this.
Tell us about some of the events they
have. Yeah, okay. How is monks running after you as you're trying to smuggle Bibles any less scary than just
I mean, that makes it fun. That was scary. That was realistic. That's how you celebrate.
Pin the 99 theses on the wall.
Pin the 99 theses,
climb
like
the
pin
stairs.
The tail on the donkey.
Burn the papal bull.
So what do you all think about those like alternative holiday or Halloween parties?
Well, I think the Reformation party they do is probably the most directly focused on celebrating a important Christian period of history, more than just trying to say, hey, let's put a Christian veneer over what everybody else wants to do. You know, let's give them a Christian reason.
You mean like the trunk or treat?
No, like my mom's church does the Hallelujah party. That's like instead of Halloween.
Or even the Hell Houses. You know, hey, if we can just change the theme to you might go to hell if you don't, you know, leave your sins, but let's do all the cool haunted house stuff. You know, I mean, there, I don't know, too many other things just seem like the veneer's too thin.
Okay, so have you attended the Mott? You obviously bring your kids to the Reformation party.
Yeah.
Do they remember what they learn when they go to those?
Yes, they do, because it's reinforced at home, or and it is interesting, you know, the pin the theses and the Bible smuggling, which is my daughter's favorite, to get thrown in jail because she's trying to take a Bible from one end of the church to the other. They show nice videos about martyrs, Protestant martyrs.
And you get candy every time you do an activity.
And then when someone gets murdered, you get a Snickers bar. That's
exactly.
That's right. It's like payback.
How can you not remember it?
It's sugar reinforcement.
Okay. So what about Christians who are out there like in workplaces and they're supposed to dress up in their office or whatever for Halloween and they're supposed to be part of the hubbub? You know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of our audience comes up against that. What are they supposed to do in those situations?
Well, again, it's a matter of conscience, isn't it? I mean, go to Romans 14 and Paul's talking about how Christians can disagree on things like this. In Colossians, I'll quote here. It says, therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath.
That brings up a good point. I actually lived in Mexico for about a year. This was a decade or two ago. And I was there over Halloween, which they call Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead, which is a celebration that lasts a few days. Anyway, what a lot of the folks in the area of Mexico that I lived in did is they built an altar with a lot of candy and other kind of food. And then they spread these orange flowers from the altar through the house, out the door, to the street. And apparently their dead relatives would come visit, enjoy the food. Anyway, I was visiting one of these houses, and they offered me some of the food from their altar. And I remember that verse, and I thought, you know, I'm free to eat it.
Yeah,
so I did.
There you go.
Well, it seems like the probably the challenge we should come back to is how much is culture shaping us and how much are we shaping culture? And for all the holidays, I think it's worth asking, are we being transformed by the world or are we transforming culture around us by really meditating on what it is God would have us to do to live in the world around us in a way that glorifies Him?
Well, and we live, you know, here in Colorado Springs, we live near a community, Manitou Springs, that is known to have more witches per capita than anywhere in the U.S. And I think, I mean, there are times when I walk through neighborhoods there. I've been there at night where people literally are, you can tell that there is satanic activity going on there and stuff like that. And I think it's just completely scary. I mean, you can see what the effects of that are at times. So it is kind of hard, you know, it seems like the line is blurred between kids in, you know, Miley Cyrus costumes or whatever, or in bunny costumes or whatever's happening versus, you know, what does the holiday stand for? I guess, I mean, that's where you kind of are wondering, well, you know, what do I do? What don't I do?
Well, that's a good point, because when I was a kid, they didn't have, or even a teenager, they didn't have serious Wicca cult in schools that they do now. I mean, they just dressed up as, well, in a, as a small kid, Superman, and it seemed to be a lot more innocent. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe that was just my memory. But it seems to be more serious now, like what you're saying, with the rise of Wicca.
Okay, so with all that info out there, what are you guys actually planning on doing with your kids or at your homes for Halloween?
Well, our house will be dark because we're going to go to church, like we mentioned before, to celebrate the Reformation celebration, which is just full of fun.
So you don't leave a bowl of candy on your front porch with a sign that says,
you know,
please take only one?
We don't. I'm sorry. We do have jack-o'-lanterns. No, we don't. Just pumpkins.
Oh, okay.
All right, Waters?
We're actually going to some friend's house. Just got invited yesterday, and we were going to go to one of the church activities. Actually, half the family would go. I would just stay home and hope that I would go into labor. I would eat copious amounts of Reese's peanut butter cups and hope that the sugar would put me into labor.
But we are going to leave a sign on the front porch that says, please take one from the neighbor's bowl.
That's right. Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to take my kids out and we're going to go smash pumpkins and steal candy from other kids. Either that or we may go to a local church, to, just visit a local church that has those bouncy houses. I like those a lot.
No one's handing out tracts. You know what? I've handed out the Focus on the Family Kids magazines in the
That's
past.
That's right.
It's a good idea.
You can do that.
You guys.
You're so awesome.
I'm just blessed
to
be a blessing
do that
people.
Too. We're
I just
both
do what it
kind of
takes,
family.
Okay?
We'll do that
I just
too.
Can't believe we're sitting in the
Let's
studio
Let's not be hiding
candy.
From the gospel, okay?
Well, you know, I think the best thing, though, is that for probably the first time in 10 years here in Colorado, we can actually be out and about on Halloween night because there's no blizzard forecast
this year. That's
right,
no snow in the forecast.
That
is good.
It's kind
of a nice change in Colorado.
I'm actually going out of town. I have a church, our Sunday school class has a retreat that weekend. So we are actually doing, oh my goodness, this is so exciting. Let me tell you about it. We're going to be up in a mining town up north of here, Victor, Colorado, which is known for its mines and known for its history. And Halloween night, we all have to dress up as someone from that Victorian era in the mining town. I'm just saying, so it's kind of a costume party, but there will not be devils or witches or anything. Well, I don't know, unless someone comes as a witch from that era, but maybe we won't let them come in. I don't know.
Some other shady character.
But anyway,
or maybe if somebody comes as the lead singer of The Cure.
Hopefully not. That is not representative of that era. So, although that would be similar to dressing up like a witch or a demon because that costume was frightening the last time I saw it. So we don't
There were some
that,
other but. Characters of the era in the Victor Prime that were probably a little more shady, probably shouldn't want to dress like.
No doubt, yes. We will try to avoid that. And then the rest of the weekend, we'll study the life of Joseph, and we'll just turn it around, and everyone will get saved, and it'll be all good. So, well, we will go ahead and plan on talking about Thanksgiving and whether or not that is appropriate come November.
Stuffing is
always
appropriate.
Should we really be thankful to the Lord for anything? Stay tuned in November, and we will talk about that. So, until then, celebrate Halloween. No, don't celebrate Halloween. I just didn't say that.
No, have the freedom to do what your conscience
Well, I was
going to
say celebrate it or don't, but I don't think we should celebrate. Yeah, whatever.
Forever and ever.
Here we are back with another culture segment, and with me in the studio, I have Bob Olaszewski, director of Plugged In at Focus on the Family. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Lisa. Once again, it's always good to be on the podcast.
I'm just so pleased that you're still hanging out with us now that you had a star turn in Fireproof. Again, for those of you, I don't know if we even mentioned that Bob actually assembled the hospital bed in the main characters in the woman's room, or her mother's room, the one who she was getting the hospital equipment
for. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where my Oscar is going to go. I've got on my fireplace mantle, I've got a cross in the center, and I hate to move the cross over to put my Oscar, so maybe just side by side. But, you know, I'm not sure they have a category for best medical bed assembly by an actor. But if they do, I know I have that category.
Yours, for
sure.
I have it. Do not move the cross. I do not encourage that. But I've heard that most celebrities keep theirs in their bathrooms. So you may want to try that.
I'll have to build some shelves in my bathroom because I don't have any shelves in my bathroom. But that's a good idea. Anyways,
I think you need to do that. So.
For my Oscar. But you know, to not be funny about this thing, I actually haven't said much about the fact that I'm in the film, even though my screen time is like a potted plant for like 8 seconds worth or whatever. But I don't want anyone to think that the reason I've been so fond of this movie is because I play this 8 second mini teeny little role, because it's like I love the movie in spite of the fact that I somehow was coaxed into 8 seconds of screen time when I was down there basically to watch a couple days of shooting, and they said, "Hey, Bob, you want to be in a scene?" And I'm like, "Sure."
And it added. It did add.
Thank you.
And we will say that DVD is expected to come out in February. So
that is what they're saying. I think it's up for grabs for what the firm date is. But the tentative date was, wouldn't it be cool if it came out on Valentine's Day weekend? And we encouraged, and what they're saying now, maybe even 350,000 copies that they think might sell.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be incredible.
That's what we've heard. So, wow, that's exciting. Well, similarly, speaking of movies that are similar, we're going to talk about a few that are coming out, or that are out actually now, ones that you want to talk about. Very similar to Fireproof is Saw 5. Why are we talking about Saw 5? Do I need to bring my youth group kids to this, Bob? Yeah. What are we talking about?
You know, anybody who's listening needs to know about Saw 5, if they don't already know, is that do we really need another torture porn film? I mean, I don't understand. I really don't understand the likes of slasher films. I don't understand the appeal. I don't understand the adrenaline draw. I really don't. But obviously, people continue to go because it was the second most popular movie when it came out last weekend with $32 million. So people, you know, do go. But
it must be the October thing. It must be leading into what is Halloween, and everyone expects to go to something. It's just like a nostalgia thing or something. I mean, but
well,
number five, I mean, you
got to
be
kidding
Halloween.
Me. You're not going to find it as a Christmas Day release. That we're going to put out Saw 6, you know.
Yeah.
So there is something about definitely Halloween. But again, I just don't understand it. And so we don't need to really go into that one,
okay.
Of course. But another similar to that last week was Pride and Glory, rated R.
Is that the sequel to Pride and Prejudice?
No, not even close. Let me just say this.
I was planning on going to that thinking it
that
was.
There were over, this is all
like
you need to know
Darcy
about this film. Thinking
kids.
About going? Know that there are over 300 F-bombs in Pride and Glory. That's over two per minute, you know.
What?
And again, what I have to say is, do we really need another film where the writers, you know, actually have some kind of keystroke to put in the F-word because they use it so many times they don't want to type it, you know? It's just, you know, we don't need that. However, there was one film last weekend that... Some people call cheesy. Fortunately, $42 million worth of folks didn't because they lined up and it was Disney's G-rated latest in the High School Musical franchise, High School Musical 3. Personally, I like it because it's really
it's
not...
It's G-rated?
It's G-rated.
I can't even believe that. Wow.
I know. Well, it's yeah, and that's really
Aren't
neat
there
because
bare midriffs?
G-rated movies are typically the death knell in the box office, but Disney proved once again you don't have to push the envelope. Keep it a G, keep it clean, and people will still go and pay. Surprise, surprise. Anyways, but it's...
And it's very realistic because, you know, high school basketball stars always tend to break out in song while on the court. So that is just
and every single problem
life
in
right
life
there.
Can be solved in a High School Musical by breaking out in a song. So yeah, why
exciting.
Not? But you know what? In this tough time when the economy seems to be kind of tanking and a lot of other things going, you know, I think it's nice to actually have a little bit of escapism in a positive way where people can break out in song. It does harken back to those old black and white musicals of yesteryear, only this one's not black and white. So the music is fun, the choreography is fun. These are not high school kids with, you know, 30 with a terrible attitude and sporting some kind of a goth black trench coat. You know, this is about teens that their biggest problem is the fact that they're graduating high school and they're having to figure out how to say goodbye and where to really go to college. Do I go where my dad wants me to go and just shoot basket at Albuquerque U, or do I go and do the stage, which is what I want to do? You know, those are the big problems in life they're dealing with in High School Musical. I don't mind that.
So they're really, I mean, they're graduating from high school, but they're not having sex. How did this movie get made?
I know. I don't understand that. And you know, the nice thing is there may even be room for High School Musical 4. Now somebody will go, wait a minute, they're graduating. How can I think there's High School Musical 4, the first year reunion, you know, coming, but no one's, Disney's not announced that. But they actually have said that they think there is going to be a High School Musical 4. So what are they going to do? I don't know, but you know, God bless them. I'm glad that Disney's had success with this franchise.
Well, then there can be High School Musical 20 when they all find one another on Facebook and they just become reconnected after that many years. That'll be exciting. So we'll look forward to that. Well, tell us a little bit about a couple things that are coming up. I know we have more cartoons.
You know, there's a movie out this weekend called The Changeling. This was a movie that I found very, very interesting. It's the stars Angelina Jolie. It's the true story back in 1928 of a woman who goes to work, and when she returns home, her son, who's 9 years old, is missing. And the Los Angeles Police Department return a boy to her later and claim it's her son. And she's like, you think I wouldn't know who my son is? This isn't my son. And they're like, well, you've been through so much trauma, you don't even recognize him. And it sounds like an implausible, but it is based on a true story. I found the film to be fascinating and the R rating to be very much on the low side. In fact, if it hadn't, MPAA is allowing 2 F-bombs for a PG-13 rating, and this one had 3. So it crossed into the R. And I don't excuse it, and there's misuses of the Lord's name, and I don't excuse that at all. But I am saying this may be the perfect film, actually, to keep in mind for, you know, a clear play machine when it comes out on DVD, because it is a fascinating look at the 1928 story of this woman. It was fascinating, to say the least.
Okay. And then what else do we have that's coming
out?
Madagascar
down the pike? 2 comes out real soon. That should be a fun one. Milk comes out on Thanksgiving weekend in limited release. The story of Harvey Milk. I haven't seen the film. I've only seen the trailer. But it, from what I saw in the trailer, it made Brokeback Mountain look like a Pixar film. So I'm already trying to figure out what we can do here at Focus on the Family to help get the word out, even though the stars Sean Penn and a boatload of actors, and I think they're already, the Oscar buzz is already around it, and probably only because of the agenda more than the acting, but we'll see.
Okay. And anything else, anything out on DVD that we should be aware of? Or,
you know, Expelled came out just a couple of weeks ago. I love this film, documentary about intelligent design. Can't recommend enough that people go rent this. Actually, what I recommend is people buy it and then give a copy to someone that they can connect with at their local high school, a science teacher that's would love to have it, who could get it into some science classes to watch, rather than just donate it to the library and it ends on some shelf that no one ever watches. But give it to someone who can say, oh yeah, I'll make sure we see this and watch this. And Journey to the Center of the Earth just came out, and I like that film, especially with the 3D glasses that I wore in the theater. I don't know if there's going to be a 3D edition for watch on your TV at home, but either way, it was kind of a fun film.
Well, good. Okay. Well, we will have you back, Bob, when we head into the holidays. Thanksgiving and Christmas tend to be bigger times for Absolutely. Movie releases, and then obviously we'll be looking forward to early next year when we start hearing what the Oscar contenders will be. And I know we've had years in the past where we've talked about how the top five, you know, none of them were good choices. I mean, yeah. It just seems like when it hits Oscar time, family friendliness goes out the window.
Atonement, No Country for Old Men, you know, yeah. There Will Be Blood. It's like, what were they thinking? And if Milk becomes a Oscar contender, I'll be the first one right now to say, what were they thinking?
I think you need to go and protest. Maybe you'll get, because of Fireproof, you know, your star turn, maybe you'll be invited this year.
Well, so. I'm surprised they haven't called me to ask me to shoot 8 seconds for their film, Milk, but I will have to turn it down.
The call may still come. It may still come. We'll see. So, well, good. This has been excellent. Again, this is Bob Waliszewski with Focus on the Family's Plugged In. You can check them out at pluggedinonline.com. And of course, we always reference them at boundless.org when we need advice and information on navigating the entertainment and media world. So thanks, Bob, for being a guest with us today.
You bet. Thank you, Lisa. From the rising sun, we can start over again. With each new dawn, I promise you, my friend, this grace is new again.
This week, we welcome John Thomas back for The Hungry Years.
Before Starbucks, there was Changin', the first coffee house I ever set foot in. Far from the dimly lit earth tones of modern-day coffee shops where suburbanites slurp peppermint mochas from bowl-sized mugs and chat about whatever, regulars here drank watered-down Folgers in plain styrofoam cups, surrounded by decor that is best described as early 1980s abandoned storefront. Changin' was a street ministry where in my early 20s I would spend one evening a week engaged in bizarre dialogues with anyone willing to stop in for free caffeine, a diluted placebo, really, and discuss the gospel. The conversations were anything but normal, mostly paranormal, with a hint of paranoia. The leaping-off point might be the Bible, but soon we'd be discussing the Tao of Star Trek or the dark secrets of the Illuminati. I remember one encounter that was fairly typical with a guy named Eddie. Well, hey, what do you think about the Bible? I had to get to the point with these folks. Their patience was, like their attention span, short, and they knew it was coming anyway, so off I'd go. Never read it, he said with a shrug. But I like what that apostle Nostradamus had to say with all those prophecies and stuff. Now, stuff was not his choice of words, but this podcast adheres to G-rating standards. He wasn't an apostle, I said. No? Well, he predicted JFK's assassination like 1,000 years before it happened, so, you know, pretty weird stuff. Now, if you had a strong aversion to hearing expletives at the end or beginning or in the middle of virtually every sentence, then changing wasn't the place for you. Now, this took a little getting used to for me, and Tom, the guy who ran the place, wouldn't let people hang around for long if the language got too abusive. Eddie didn't go that far, so I forged ahead. Well, a lot of people read into events after they happen and then claim to find it in Nostradamus' prophecies, I smartly countered. But Scripture has thousands of prophecies that validate its truth. The birth of Christ, for instance, was... hang on, I need more coffee, he interrupted. Tom watered the coffee down so much that it took gallons to feel any caffeine effect, which created the problem of numerous trips to the coffee counter and... Hey, I gotta hit the little boy's room, Eddie yelled across the metal folding chair scattered about. I silently prayed for God's help and that Eddie wouldn't crawl out the bathroom window. Well, he came back and he plopped down. Let me ask you something, Thompson. Have you ever heard of Area 51? The name's Thomas, and yes, numerous times since I started coming down here. Well, you know, a lot of people who know the truth about that place have mysteriously disappeared, as well as many people who were involved with our alleged moonwalks. Look, I've seen the pictures of those aliens, dude. It's some scary stuff. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Look, Eddie, I had to head him off before he could get to crop circles. I don't know what to think about all that, but you mentioned truth, and here's the truth. If you need a friend, if you need peace in your life, if you need someone who can help you with what you're going through in life, I know where you can get it. Jesus Christ. What, that dude up there? He pointed to a velvet painting of a laughing Jesus hanging on the wall. Well, yeah, that's one painter's guess, I said, but I picture him right after he's banged his thumb with a hammer. And now that's more like something I would do. And Jesus was a carpenter, so I figure he did that a few times. Oh, heck yes. That's what I mean when I say he knows what you're going through. He's been there. He was even homeless for a few years. No stuff. So if anyone can relate to what your life is like, Eddie, he can. And he can help. Here, these are a couple of stories about him that paint a picture that's a lot better than that one on the wall. I handed him a modern paraphrase of the Book of John. You know, Eddie, I think once you start, you won't be able to put it down. He took the pamphlet and stared at it, and then he stared at me. Yeah, I'll take a look. Hey, look, I gotta run, Thomason. He headed for the door, tucking the pamphlet into the front pocket of his camo army jacket. I was exhausted, worn out from the mental gymnastics. How could God possibly use that conversation to reach someone's heart? Tom pulled up beside me and said, hey, you did your part and God'll do his. He patted me on the back and he went to make another pot of coffee. My eyes drifted up to the picture of Jesus. We laughed together for a minute and I prayed, thanking God for the privilege of sharing his gospel. I grabbed my styrofoam cup, gave it a refill, and looked for someone else.
Grace is the only defense for the condemned. The only way to stand before God free, forgiven. And as we stand, our plea must be, we will only stand here with Christ.
Of God.
We are here to open up this week's Boundless Inbox, and I have Candace with me in the studio to talk about a listener question regarding the election and politics. Very apropos, headed into this coming week. And let me just read the question for you, Candace. Welcome,
okay,
by the way.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, this person says, "Dear Boundless, with the election at hand, it seems the subject of politics is seeping into virtually every conversation I have. Many of my friends do not share my political views, and as much as I temper my conversations with kindness and respect, our differing views still create tension and leave me feeling disconnected from my friends. What are your suggestions for maintaining loving relationships and healthy conversations during election season?"
Well, this is a good question in that it's probably at its most intense because the election is days away. But the thing that struck me when I first read the question is that really the principle underlying the question applies in election years and non-election years, because what she's really talking about is the issue of worldview and how the people you spend the most time with and the people you have the closest friendships with feel and think about the issues of utmost importance, whether it's politics or religion or issues of marriage and relationship, premarital sex. You could be talking about abortion. You could be talking about any number of controversial issues that would tend to create tension if you disagreed. And I think the quick sort of off-the-cuff thought is, well, you know, we're called to be friends with non-believers and to try to convert people to a righteous way of thinking, a biblical way of thinking, which is what we call a biblical worldview. And it, just in case you're wondering what I'm meaning by that term, it's just a way of thinking cohesively about all the issues that everything sort of does hold together in a framework of thought where you're consistent. So, you know, you don't say, well, I'm a little bit country, I'm a little bit rock and roll, or I'm a little bit, you know, global warming, I'm a little bit capitalist, I'm a little bit socialist, that you want to have a view of the world that holds together. And so, yes, we do want to be reaching out to people with different worldviews, certainly, but those conversations will always be tense because we don't agree. And so I guess my encouragement would be to say, as much as you spend time with people of differing worldviews, it's equally important that you have a community of support in your life of people who share your worldview, because you need to have some people who reinforce and affirm the ways you're thinking, especially when it comes down to being biblical in how you think. And I do think that there is a biblical way of thinking about things like government and things like election and elections and elected officials. And those issues do matter, and you wouldn't be human, your heart wouldn't be beating, if in a moment of impassioned conviction about a candidate or an issue, you didn't feel tense if your close friends disagreed with you or maligned your position. And so I don't think there's a way around that tension.
I think it also helps, too, wouldn't you say, Candace, for especially as they are talking about elections or the upcoming election, to one, focus on the issues and not make it about personalities or people or you are this because you support this person or mm-hmm. you must be this way to do that. But also to make sure that you're also talking about other things. I mean, just because it's an election season doesn't mean that every conversation has to revolve around things that are polarizing, you know. And I think right. It's great to maintain those foundational things of why are you friends or acquaintances in the first place? And hey, you know, here's something that is maybe going to be a little bit divisive among us, but this is why, you know, my heart really resonates with this issue and why I believe that. But, you know, hey, and here's something else to talk about here. So
right. Not to trivialize, because in the week before an election, you would have lots of conversations potentially being about the election if you are a person who cares deeply about it. But also not to feel like just because in this group you're the odd man out that you are odd. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who will probably agree with you, and it's okay to have some friends who agree or who are like-minded. There's nothing wrong with having friendships with people who are like-minded. There's nothing weak-willed about that or unbiblical about that. I mean, we want to be reaching out and in friendship to people who are different than we are. But why? Well, a lot of times so that we can potentially convert them, that we can convince them that if our arguments are compelling, that they might come around to our way of thinking. We don't just hang out to say we're multicultural or, you know, to have some label about how hip we are. There needs to be some, I think, intentionality about friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I'm just going to say that most people should be used to this anyway, because honestly, if you were talking about Jesus Christ as often as most of us as believers should be, and peppering our conversations with that, I think we should be used to having people come up against us, because if there's anything that's, you know, divisive, offensive, it's the gospel. And
that's
so
right.
Hopefully we're all well practiced in that. And then when you talk about things that are important, but you know, more temporary things like this election, you know, maybe there will be room for conversation and discourse on that without it becoming too crazy. You know, stay away from the name calling.
That's right. Don't make attacks on people, but don't be afraid to be bold and to have salty speech. Christ talked about that, and to be able to make a compelling argument for what you believe.
Mm-hmm. And bring cookies.
Or at least.
And hot chocolate.
And
that
chocolate
helps.
Chocolate. Right now, I mean, there's a lot of free chocolate out there, right, people? Take your pillowcase and ring a few doorbells.
There is. So, and I think post-election, we'll have the opportunity to talk about really where our country goes from here. And that's going to spawn a lot of conversations about doom and gloom and whatnot, depending on, you know, regardless of which candidate gets in office.
Depending on your viewpoint.
Exactly.
And regardless of who wins, it will be no less necessary to be on our knees before the Lord praying for our leaders. That's what we're told to do.
And we will do that. So in the meantime, give us your thoughts. Write to us at editor@boundless.org or give us a call at 1-866-687-8686. We would love to hear your viewpoints on this and really ideas or suggestions for how people can enter into conversation and a healthy dialogue and or debate surrounding the issues, but still remain friends with their coworkers, with their family members, and really be, as Candace was saying, salt and light into a situation that does need much prayer and really needs us to be fighting for what we believe, but on our knees at the same time. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We always love to have you here as part of our audience, as part of our family here at Boundless. We will see you again next time on the show as we address more issues pertinent to young adults out there in the U.S. and beyond. And we love to have you a part of that conversation.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.